I had to look at the brain from a very different perspective. The most exciting thing was that you can fix it, you know, and you can repair it and you can change it, and it's plastic.
And he had like a 100% success quote.
Oh, wow.
And then they went after him, and they threw him out of the university where he was teaching, and he was like, even they put him even into prison.
Meditation does a lot of things in the brain, lots and lots. It improves connectivity, it improves the theta, the level of gamma improves, your intuition, the way you take decisions, so many things improve, you know.
Hello, ihr Lieben. Hello, this is Dr. Schweta. I just make a little introduction in German and then I switch in English. Die gute Dame ist aus Indien, lebt in Dubai aktuell, ist Neurowissenschaftlerin und hat einen sehr, sehr spannenden Lebenslauf und viele spannende Forschungsergebnisse. Und jetzt switche ich mit ihr auf Englisch. Very nice that you are here, Dr. Schweta. Yes.
Thank you so much.
I made a short German introduction, just
sure. Yes.
To make the bridge.
Yes.
Yeah. So your main topic is brains, right?
That's right. I joke and I say I'm a brain plumber. I fix broken brains.
Okay.
I'm a neurologist.
Okay. So you are
quite interested in fixing and more important, you know, pushing the normal capacities. So I run a lab called Limitless Brain Lab. I feel each of us are born limitless. It's about uncovering and unpackaging the secret.
So are you familiar with Dr. Joe Dispenza?
Yes, very much, very much.
Okay.
A lot of our experiments, we do cross-refer his experiments as well. And we do also a lot of experiments with longevity, with coherence, heart-brain coherence. How does meditation shape and change the brain? So yes, of course.
Ah, yeah, very interesting. So what is the main thing you discovered when it comes to brains? I think nowadays we have a lot of we have in general a lot of disease and health issues, but also the brain is very affected, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So essentially, first of all, you know, my own brain was the first to go to the lab. The entire story started with me because I was struggling with an issue for attachment, you know. So I had this lovely, wonderful, dear friend of mine. Grew up together, very, very close relationships, almost like a sister, 25 years of a long relationship. And then suddenly she just disappears out of my life. The relationship is no more. And it was very hurting for me. I just could not come out of it. It was like, you know, as though there was no life. And every day, yes, intellectually, everything was going well. Things were fine because I studied from the top colleges, the best of jobs and best of gold medals, everything great intellectually. But emotionally, there was a big problem. I couldn't focus anything at all, you know, in my emotional life. And I felt as though I was empty and nothing is there. And every day I would come home and then breakfast, lunch and dinner. This was the only conversation, rumination, right? My parents, both into the medical fields, got fed up of me after a while. They said, God, you know, no conversations of this kind. But the pain was very intense. And I was traveling to US and there was a conference which was going on. And the next door, so I was participating in another conference. Next door, they were studying romantic breakups. So I just knocked the door to the professor and said, can you check my brain? It's not a romantic breakup, but a childhood friendship breakup. And then
it was a very, very dear friend of yours.
Yes, very, very dear friend. Almost we grew together, you know. Mm-hmm. We were neighbors and 25 long years, right? It's a long time. Mm-hmm. So this professor said, we do functional MRI and it's very expensive. You know, you'll have to pay a lot to do the scan. I said, doesn't matter, you know, but I want to see what is going on. So I go ahead and do the scan and then we come back, you know, we're sitting on a table, sipping a cup of coffee. And the professor says, you are a neurologist, so you know the brain. I said, yeah, I know the brain, you know. So what is going wrong? I said, I looked at the scan and I said, oh, wow, there is an area in the brain called ventral tegmental area. Mm-hmm. And this VTA was lighting up, which means something was wrong there. And he immediately, you know, I said, oh my God, this gets lighted up as per my knowledge in heroin addicts, in cocaine addicts, And so the professor says, yeah. So I said, I have never seen heroin. I've never seen cocaine in my life. So it was the attachment, which was actually the rumination part of it, and addiction, essentially, which was not getting out from my brain. So when I had that image in my brain, I was, you know, sort of shocked. I was taken aback. I said, I will fix this. I have to work around this problem, you know. Mm-hmm. So I came back to my lab, and although we used to do a lot of experiments, it was never for you, right? So it's always an objective experience. But the moment it becomes subjective, things change. So I told my guys, I said, you will keep doing my EEGs, electroencephalogram. So we do a lot of EEGs of different kinds. We do right from 10 channels to 25 channels to 66 channels. And I said, keep doing it until my brain gets fixed. So at every interval, and then the question is, how do I fix this, you know? So I knew a lot about the brain, but not the formula to reverse it. You know, now that I had to do it, I had to look at the brain from a very different perspective. Mm-hmm. And I started to do that, you know, your question about what is the most exciting thing? The most exciting thing was that you can fix it, you know, and you can repair it, and you can change it, and it's plastic. But obviously, it takes a heavens of a this, right? So I was struggling with all the things. So I read all the books to fix it and went and did all the practices.
So what did you do?
So breathing practice and meditation and pranayama, and nothing was happening. And then I thought, you know, let me invite people who have already done that. And I will learn from them when I invite them to the lab, and let me have a look at their brains. So with that thing, I got an idea to invite all the peak performers. So great athletes, all the people who are leaders and thinking, people who have, you know, you thought leaders, also people who have undergone some, let's say, accidents. And then, you know, the resilience. One such person is Nicole. And I often quote her because A, I love her, and B, she stood on Burj Khalifa. She stood with an Emirates Airlines advertisement. I don't know if you guys saw that, you know, but it was a very popular ad. So she's a stunt woman, and Burj Khalifa is the tallest building in the world, right? So she stood up there. But I read in her story that she was in ICU for a few months with roughly about 10 to 12 accidents, major accidents, I mean, 10 to 12 fractures.
Can you please, just a second? I didn't quite get that.
So Nicole is one of the stunt women which we studied, you know, and she stood on Burj Khalifa.
What is this?
Burj Khalifa is the tallest building in the world in Dubai.
Okay.
It's the tallest building. It is 150 floors, you know. And she actually stood there with Emirates Airlines advertisement. And when I read her story, she was a few months in ICU, and then she had some broken...
What does ICU mean?
ICU is intensive care unit, you know, in a hospital.
Hospital
with so many broken bones, fractures. So coming from that to going ahead and doing the most difficult stunt in the world. So what is going on in the brain, right? There's some resilience, something happening. So every single person that I interviewed and invited, something was very unique to learn. And then we started studying their brain patterns. What is happening behind the scene? What is their frontal cortex like? What is happening in their emotional cortex, emotional system? How are they balancing right and the left?
Mm-hmm.
How is it with eyes open and eyes closed? So a lot of parameters started to sort of, you know, shout out loud that, oh, this is how you can have a brain and which is able to do an X task, you know, a Y task. So it sort of became a mathematical formula for us then, because we had lots of data. And very quickly, I also understood that I'm stuck in this emotional brain, while we all of us, irrespective, wherever we live, we have three brains, the same type. We have a brain stem, which is right at the back.
Mm-hmm.
Breathing, my heart is beating, everything is happening from that brain stem. The moment I go up a little bit deeper, it's called the emotional brain. Also called the limbic brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this frontal cortex or frontal brain. Now, the beauty of the brain is the emotional brain and the frontal brain works like a seesaw. So if my emotional brain is at the peak, my frontal brain is quiet. And if my frontal brain works, my emotional brain is quiet. So this seesaw pattern is very fascinating. So now what does this frontal cortex do? getting the best choices out of life. You know, we say B and D, birth and death. There's only one thing in middle, that is the C, the choices that we make.
Mm-hmm.
So the frontal cortex is all about choices. It is about what is good for me, my emotional control, emotional regulation, the way in which I will be speaking or the way in which I think, my problem-solving abilities. So it's basically everything that a person needs. Now, for people who are very emotional, anger, or, you know, you label it attachment and greed and fear. Fear is a big problem, right? We all saw what happened during so many pandemics and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Insecurity. So when that happens, your frontal cortex is shut. You cannot operate efficiently. You cannot take decisions. So when I understood this formula, the easiest thing to do was activate this guy, the frontal cortex,
mm-hmm.
and then let the limbic system be under its control. So it was very simple looking a thing. But yes, the question is, what do you do to get there? You know, so that is what we study, and we still study, and we keep on building tools for getting that frontal cortex activated. Mm-hmm. But all these people, beautiful brains, you know, both sides were very well connected. Lots of gamma. Now, gamma is one special wave in the brain. It is like a super brain wave. So waves are like little ups and downs that we see how we have in the EKG. The same way, brain also has a lot of sinusoidal waves. And we attach electrodes and we see that. Now, these waves are the signature pattern of how the brain is functioning. In that one of the signatures, when we go to sleep, yes, we have a very slow wave called delta. When I'm awake, you are awake, you're listening to me, I am talking, there is activity happening. This is fast wave beta. The moment I close my eyes, it is slow alpha.
Mm-hmm.
Just before going to sleep, it is theta, a deeper, still deeper state.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have this gamma, gamma is like a literally a super brain wave. So wherever it comes, it improves the function of that part. So if I have it front here, then all my decisions, executive functions, my speech, my problem solving, everything will be very good. So most of these people had this gamma, and this was very fascinating for me.
So this, just to understand you right, this gamma is like a frequency?
Yes, yes. It's a special frequency, 30 to 50 hertz, very fast beating frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever it is there in the brain, it optimizes that function.
So that's somehow, so you did prove that, for example, meditation helps the brain to work better.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
Meditation does a lot of things in the brain, lots and lots. It improves connectivity. It improves the theta. The level of gamma improves, your intuition, the way you take decisions. So many things improve, you know. So we take certain practice, for example, a meditation. We do the scans pre and we do the scans post. And we see the changes which is happening. Now, when I got all these changes and then I started to ask these people, what do you do every day? And everybody invariably started to talk meditation and breath work and, you know, all. And I'm like, okay, you know, exercises of different kinds. And then a lot of people also came out scribing that we write down what is negative, you know, and that has served us. Journaling, practice of gratitude. And I wondered, wow, okay. Gratitude, what is gratitude doing to the brain, you know? What just feeling grateful and gratitude or writing it down, how is it rewiring? So every single thing when we started to take and study further, which obviously takes a while, you know, because you gather the participants and then you do the study, etc. and all. But it was just absolutely fascinating to see how small incremental changes in your daily life. For example, I want to build this biceps. I don't look at it. I have to work for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the same way, if I want to build alpha in the brain, which I get it when I close my eyes, if I don't close my eyes, how will I build alpha? You'll be surprised when I go to a lot of workshops and even to this audience when we ask how many minutes in an entire day you close your eyes and sit. And sometimes people say none.
Mm-hmm.
All the time, with all the screens, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you don't build a certain thing, use it or lose it. So very, very simple things in everyday life, we're making a big change. So we came out with something called, and it's a very famous acronym. So our channels, Limitless Brain Lab and Dr. Shweta Aradhya, we have around 15 million views across the globe and 200 million impressions. Movers. We started with this campaign called Movers. So meditation, oxygenation, visualization, exercise, reading something affirmative or positive, or chanting, and S, scribing, writing out what is not serving. So when you do movers, 5 minutes in each segment, you change the wiring of the brain for good.
Ah, that's really interesting. So how long does it take per day?
Each 5 minutes, so about 25 minutes every single day.
Interesting. So that means that all the people you tested in your lab, they had, what did they have in common?
So all of them, all these people who did it, despite all the challenges and despite all the problems in life, they had balance between left and right. They were very good producers of this gamma, the brainwave that I said. When they close eyes and when they open eyes, the alpha was very robust, very strong. And essentially the connectivity between the two sides of the brain and the general kind of, we call it coherence, that was very good for them. So all these were factors leading them to take better decisions, have better choices, you know, have faster outputs. And most important for all of us, I feel, is, you know, you don't get stuck in the past. You sort of get the value of the present. And then you can design your future in such a way where you're relaxed, you know, you're calm. Your autonomic nervous system is the only system where, you know, there's fight, flight, and then there is rest and digest. So you're able to have a nice balanced thing. Each of these performers on an average had exceptional qualities for this kind of a brain.
And did they all use like similar techniques or differently?
Different techniques. But I think the denominator of how it works is sort of the same. Now you pick up any meditation, right? It can be just watching the breath. It can be transcendental meditation. It can be a meditation which is Vipassana, certain special meditations which you see in Indian ancient traditions or Buddhist meditation. Irrespective of that, the changes in the brain are mostly, I would say, mostly similar. So it is all about the practice and the consistency of the practice, how regularly you have been doing.
And for example, would just relaxing, for example, to lay down and to not sleep, but to really rest and just breathe, would it have the same effect?
Yes. It will allow you to have alpha, which is like a buzz, you know, relaxing rhythm. But if you go a little deeper, so the idea of any practice, for example, yoga nidra. I'm a huge fan of yoga nidra.
What is this?
It's called yoga nidra. Yoga is yoga or union, and nidra is sleep. But it is not really for sleeping, but it is a very, very ancient practice by, you know, certain, it is a guided practice. You go anywhere from 30 to 40 minutes. It allows you to go deep into the brain, theta and delta, and suddenly it makes you get up into the fast rhythm gamma. And then again, it lets you into alpha. So it sort of, you know, juggles the brain around. So each of this practice was meant to push the brain limits, you know, where the brain is just lying idle, not doing anything, change the brain rhythm, again, change the brain rhythm. And let's say the breathing practice. If I breathe alternate nase, so if I breathe through one nose and then I exhale through the other one, what we call alternate nose breathing or nasal breathing, what we see is there is an alternate activation of both sides of the brain, the left and the right, the left. So you're basically giving it opportunity to grow, you know, to repair, to heal, whatever is required.
Ah, okay. And if you have brain diseases, like Alzheimer, did you also do research on that?
Yes. So, I mean, unfortunately, I wish people didn't have all this, but look at the numbers. The current coming decade, 1700% rise is expected in Alzheimer's. astronomical figures. And as long as it was 70 years and above, okay. I mean, obviously, that's also a concern. But now, my youngest patient of Alzheimer's today, as we speak, is 49 years old. So the question comes is, you know, what are we doing to our brains? You know, all the toxins that is accumulated in the brain, and the biggest toxin for Alzheimer's is amyloid, tau proteins. It is basically eating the brain up. It is just not allowing.
What is it?
Amyloid. Amyloid is the name of the toxin, and tau. These are the toxins which are responsible in Alzheimer's disease.
And where do you find them, those toxins?
You find it in the brain, you know. So when you do a PET scan, mm-hmm. you see them all over the brain, you know, and they are basically cutting down the function of the brain.
And how do you get these toxins into your brain?
Great question. So that is what the world is wondering, right? Why is Alzheimer's disease getting into so much of a concern? So there are a few reasons for it, and that's a great question. One of them is, yes, genetic. Some varieties are genetic in nature, but largely a lot of them are from the lifestyle. Inadequate sleep, lots of stressors, lots of toxins around us, are the way we eat our food, all the sugar and all the junks and everything that we take. So it's multifactorial. Mm-hmm. But once you cross a certain limit, so it's like, you know, all these toxins get out of the body through a special system. It is called the lymphatic system. Most of us know the lymphatic system, mm-hmm. but we don't know the glymphatic system. So when I'm resting at night, there is cleansing which is happening. So it's like, you know, when I go and in a road in Dubai, everything would be nice, spick and span, because the municipality cleared off the roads at night. The same way, the system clears off all these toxins and repairs the brain. But for Alzheimer's, this is stopped. And all the toxins accumulate, you know, all the toxins accumulate. And then they cause further damage. And because we don't sleep enough, our system is also not cleaned enough. So sleep becomes an important factor, digital exposure, lots of monotonous work that we do, lack of good diet, lack of antioxidants. Mm-hmm. Look at the cancer rates. Oh, it's just astronomical again, right? Because of these toxins, which is getting exposed.
Yeah, it's really... So did you like invent a method to get those toxins out of the brain, or what did you do?
So that is what thankfully the world is working very hard towards it. We currently, as we speak, we have two molecules, and one of them is now FDA approved, where you can give it so that these toxins can be eliminated. But obviously, you know, I am more of a preventive person than the treatment. You know, you don't, when there's a fire, you don't go ahead and douse the fire. You actually don't let the fire happen. So how do you take care? Now, every single person, if I ask, they would know their hemoglobin levels. And maybe, you know, if I ask you what's your sugar level, you'll say, yeah, a few months back, I got my sugar tested. But nobody would know what is their cognitive reserve. What is the brain reserve? What is the brain capital? What is that brain bank that you have? What is your mental wellness parameters? So we call it, you know, you must have your BMW checked, your brain and mental wellness, because that is what is driving your life. So what's that BMW? So we have come up with certain very specific protocols of assessments where people can just, you know, get answer certain questions of lifestyle. One of them is freely available on our website, www.drshwetaadatia.com, drshwetaadatia.com. It's a fitness score. So how fit is your brain, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we go ahead and check the actual physical parameters. We combine everything and say, let's say I tell you that, Matthias, possibly you have a issue which is emotional regulation, or possibly you have an issue where you're not resting enough. It's a burnout brain, it's a fatigue brain. Every single thing can be deciphered from the signatures, the brain patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Once you know it, then it's like a little shock to the brain as well, right? Once I knew, oh my God, I need to fix this. So once you are aware about it, you start making those changes. And that is what we at the Limitless Brain Lab are doing passionately, that understand, become aware what is your brain's like, and start to make changes before, you know, you get succumbed to all the issues that is currently being talked about, right from burnout to stress to the dementia, paralytic strokes, heart conditions, cancers, everything.
Yeah, very interesting. Did you ever hear about Dr. Hammer from Germany?
No, what does she do?
A doctor, he doesn't live anymore, but he found out that he studied more than 1,000 cancer patients.
Mm-hmm.
He found out that they all had one thing in common, that they experienced like a trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that trauma, there was something happening in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cancer started as a repair program of mm-hmm. the trauma.
Ah.
And he just treated people with talking about helping them to overcome the situation or overcome the trauma. And he had like a 100% success quote.
Oh, wow.
And then they went after him and they threw him out of the university where he was teaching. And he was like, they put him even into prison. So it was really because what he found out was that it would change the whole way people see cancer, because people see cancer as a bad disease. And he found out that it's not a bad disease, that it's a repair program of the body.
Mm.
It's quite interesting.
That is interesting, yeah, because what you're saying is, see, sometimes what happens is basically the cells are all repairing. I mean, 7-8 years down the line, my skin will be a new skin, right? The liver cells, everything is regenerating and repairing, except for the retina, which is behind my eyes, the brain and the spine. These are the things that they don't regenerate fast enough. So, mm-hmm. And that's why we have the problems with it, which stick for life, right? So when this is repairing, obviously there are checks and balances. So sometimes the balance is not enough and then overshooting happens. But if we go to, I'm also a believer of not just this physical body, because there is also biofield and there's also bioresonance around us, right? So there are five layers. We call it the koshas in the ancient Indian terminology, but each of the layer has a specific role to play. Now, for example, my energy body is not right. There are things which are a problem in my energy body. Obviously, that will impact my physical body.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it is all about the, as you rightly mentioned, in the subconscious, I have a hurt, I have a grudge, I have a trauma, and I have not repaired it. I have not fixed it. It's just lying out there, you know? Then what is happening is the subconscious cannot do anything by itself. It needs the help of the conscious. So since you don't have a mechanism to go ahead and fix it, obviously, it will keep playing the part. So, you know, when people come to me and say, oh, universe always gives things in patterns. I said, poor universe, don't blame the universe, you know. It is your subconscious where you have no means of fixing that. So every single time, the same thing will come to you. And then another thing will come to you. And then another thing will come to you, which is almost similar. And then you cannot fix it. And it becomes a pattern. So all the things which are happening in the subconscious and all the things which are happening in your biofields or in your energy body should be acknowledged, should, you know, at some point in time be looked upon very seriously. And that's why, you know, I'm also a huge fan of any therapies which is related to energy healing, you know,
mm-hmm.
anything like Reiki or pranic healing. Pranic healing is amazing, you know. And then past life regression. Some people say, oh, but do we have evidence for past life? But look at Dr. Brian Weiss's work, which is there, right? And I had this interesting story, you know. I was in the United States for a while, and I wanted to sign up for Dr. Brian Weiss's course. And I was a neurologist then. And I very first thing that I go to the course and I meet him, and I said that, and he's quite a, at that time, obviously now he's not practicing. He was quite a popular person. Many lives, many masters, many soul, many bodies. He's written a lot of books. And I told him, look, I'm a neurologist. And I for sure can guarantee that 15 days back, what I had for dinner or what I did on this particular day, I'm not going to remember. So if I'm not able to remember such a thing, you're taking me and talking about past, it's just out of me. It's not possible. It cannot happen. And obviously he listened to me. And then, you know, I said, where are all the evidences? And obviously all the things that he has published has amazing evidence, which is great, you know. So then I stayed on, hang on. It was a 21 days program. I was learning the past life regression, and then second day, third day, fourth day, and about fifth day, you know, and he was very mindful because I was in the audience out there. And by the fifth day, he says, okay, forget about the past, you know, let us focus on the remotest thing of childhood and who would like to volunteer. And I said, I'll volunteer. Let us try to remember something which is way in your childhood. And he asked me, and specifically because he wanted to knock off my belief about the memory, right? And he says, do you have anything that you remember which is bothering you? I said, yes, I do. When I was born, whether it was 28th or 29th, my parents are confused because 12 o'clock or past 12 o'clock. Oh, that's a good problem to have. So let's go ahead and do the hypnosis. And I don't even realize 5 hours passed by. Literally, for me, it was like 5 minutes, you know. Mm-hmm. Every single detail of where I was born, what I was doing, how was my mom, you know, my mom had worn a particular polka dot suit, and then my grandmom carried a little case. The gynecologist was not there. He went to a drama. He came back with a large coat and he had thick glasses. Every single detail, like crystal clear detail, was visible like a 4K recorder, like a movie going on.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, hold on, am I hallucinating? You know, what is happening? You know, how can I see it so clearly? So every single detail. And what, there was a clock, there was no calendar. I couldn't fix that, but you know, there was a big clock. And so I came back to the hotel room and my friends are like, call your mom. We have to validate this. Call your mom. So next day we call my mom. We had a speakerphone and everybody's listening, you know, very happily, what is mom going to say? And I say, mom, look, when I was born, you were wearing this. And then dad was not there. And your gynecologist was not there. He came in 20 minutes late and he went to a theater. He was watching a drama and he wore this and blah, blah, blah. And my mom is shell-shocked. How do you know all this? You know, I said, I went and saw from in the hypnosis. Mm-hmm. So this was sort of a knock on my brain. And that is when I realized that, yes, the subconscious is like a silent recorder. Mm-hmm. 11 million bits per second, it keeps on recording. But our conscious is only processing 50 bits per second. As I'm talking to you, technically, I should also know what is happening in my surrounding. You should also be aware. And it just sort of keeps on in the loop. Now, body's mechanism is very interesting. It will only make it significant enough if there was something which was emotional, deeply emotional or deep rooted, you know, some of this was there. Otherwise, it just considers it as non-significant because it's a lot of data. It's like heap of data, which is not required. So that is what, so if you have a deep trauma, if you have deep emotions, your subconscious never forgets it. It keeps on processing, but you're not resolving because you are not in that conscious state. And that's why cancer possibly, because all these are hypotheses yet, because it is again multifactorial. So tomorrow somebody comes and says, hey, pollution is responsible for lung cancer. And you cannot defy that point because yes, a lot of pollutants are responsible for inflammation. Tomorrow somebody can say vaccines, you know, because we all had these mRNA jabs, you know, and we do see a lot of fibromyalgia. And obviously it was like 6 billion people on planet Earth are taking it. So obviously the percentage proportion would also mean to have that significant impact, right? Now, if you go to India, 90% of the people live in such terrible pollution. So obviously the inhalants are quite significant in quantity. But will we ever be able to pinpoint that this is the reason? I don't know. Maybe not. And we'll have to accept that as one of the major factors responsible. And I do believe in that. Though whatever the story you said, as an integrative practitioner, I do feel everything matters. Every little thing contributes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing what you shared about the hypnosis you had. So it really means that everything we experience is still in us, even if we cannot access it, right?
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. It's like a loop recorder. It's just taking in, it's taking in, it's taking in. And that's why, you know, if you look at children, and that is what we all have to understand from a neuroscientific perspective, that children, until the age of 13, they do not have a very strong presence of conscious mind. largely they are running in the subconsciousness. So whatever you're doing in the environment is just getting recorded. Their processing ability comes much later. Mm-hmm. In fact, the frontal cortex myelination is the last, and that happens only by the age of 24 or 25. And that's why they are questioning whether voting should be done at 18, because you don't have a frontal cortex, you know. The rental guys, the car rental guys are smart. They don't allow until 24. It's because they know the science that, oh, there's no frontal cortex, you know, don't give them it.
So that's why there's also so many accidents with young people, right? Yeah. Because they're often too risky, you know.
Yes, they're very risky, high adventure. They cannot take decisions. They often fall prey to emotional, you know, there's the sudden emotional, this what comes to them. They're very defiant. All this is because of this lack of frontal cortex. Now, until they were 13, things were fine because it was on a subconscious loop. Everything was happening subconsciously. It was more passive. But the moment they hit the development of frontal cortex, they shift into the conscious processes. Mm-hmm. And that's why the age between 0 and 3 or 0 and 4 is very important for parents. Whatever you're doing in the surrounding, you're already instilling that program. There was a study which was done, I think it was Harvard, and beautiful study, lots to take from it. So they studied the environment of the children between the age of 3 and 7. Was there smoking? Was there a lot of abuse? What kind of language the parents were using? What was happening around in that environment? And then they followed them up until the age of 45. Between the age of 35 and 45, they started to measure what is the hypertension, high blood pressure, diabetes, strokes rate, everything. For the children who had a very toxic environment, they had presence of a lot of toxin during that 3 and 7, there was a larger percentage who got disease late in life.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine, you know, like your tax subconscious is now playing out once you are quite pretty old, you know. So it's a big, big thing to take care of our kids and then to be mindful of the things going around us.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you also go back to past lives in this event?
Yes, my entire intention was let's see if there is something which comes out. Now, that's the beautiful thing, right? I did see a couple of lifetimes. One of the lifetimes, I was in Europe playing some music, and I still love music. But there's no point. I don't have any means for validation, right? So what is it true? Is it not true? I have no idea. But yes, it was an interesting thing. And I particularly feel that for certain patients, when you want to resolve some things, for example, deep phobia, you just cannot drive, let's say, you know, you can't sit on a steering wheel. Nothing explains your phobia. You go ahead and figure out what had happened. Mm-hmm. The moment you drag that file, you know, it's the file is in the cloud and now you put it on your desktop. Your conscious mind opens the file and says, oh, it is dated back, oh, way back. Forget it, you know. Why am I fearing it now? So let's erase this record. That's it. So it's a great therapy. It's a way in which you can fix a lot of things. But yes, sometimes, you know, it's too overrated. I would say that, you know, people who just want to do it for the sake of fun, don't open the dustbin. Don't need to open the dustbin. Unless you lost a very important ring, which was very expensive, don't do that, you know.
Yeah. Okay. To come back again to those patients who have like really serious brain problems or brain diseases, did you develop like different therapies for different diseases? Or
yes. So what we do is we call it as a method in which we sense, so we know what is going on, and then shift. So what are the techniques that is required to shift that? And then to search to make them, you know, even better into that. So we use a lot of mantras. We use a lot of meditation, different kinds of meditation with different frequencies. A lot of music, a lot of solfeggio frequencies, a lot of tones, like what we call as bija, like single tone. But then that has a deep impact on the wiring of the brain. We do use a lot of affirmation. So there's a customization and personalization of those therapies. I'm also a huge fan of neuromodulation. You have light and sound and everything that you can modulate your brain with, because everything makes changes. I don't know if you heard of a clinic called 40 Years of Zen. There's a clinic in US. It's called 40 Years of Zen. So you go in for 5 days. Of course, you sign that you can go mad, which is okay. You just sign that off. And then they make you do multiple simulations of different types, you know, from light of different types to sounds. And there's a nice pod. Dave Asprey is the guy who's developed that. You know, there's a nice pod which is there. You get in there. You spend 5 intensive days of brain modulation. The pretext is your brain changes into a guy who has meditated for 40 years. So 40 really? Years of Zen. So that's where
the name comes from.
Yeah, that's where the name comes from. So all your wiring, your connections. Now, is it good or bad? I don't know. Is it helpful or not? I don't know. I won't do that definitely for 5 days because your brain needs its own time. It's a matter of, you know, wiring it until it's safe as well. You know, you need to make sure that you do it properly. So we do work customization a lot. So we give also a lot of dietary advices. Certain diets have to be avoided. Certain things have to be avoided. Certain changes in their environment, even sometimes to the extent of certain changes in their job, because that job patterns are also the ones that is actually causing them the problem. So it's a very, very uniquely designed product and a very uniquely designed journey that they take on.
You're working with many different people and you help them.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Okay.
So we have locations in multiple places in India, in Europe. We do a lot of work from this customization point of view. So let's say you come to us and then you got your brain scan and you have 3 challenges that you're solving. So everything that will be given to you would be scientifically validated because we ourselves have studied it, or there's ample literature, what is available around it. So, you know, it is becomes like your prescription, you know, and there's a clear demarcation of when the changes happens and what you do next, etc. It's a journey.
Ah, interesting. And in order to scan the brain, you need to come physically to a lab, right?
Yes, yes.
You cannot do it via Zoom or so.
No, you need to physically come to the lab, yes.
Ah, okay. So where are your labs located?
So it's in Dubai, in India, in 3 or 4 cities. We are just setting up one in Estonia, very soon in Germany, a couple of places in Canada, in US. So enough, you know, and we are
going. You have something in Europe already?
Yes, in Estonia, it's coming up in Estonia.
Ah, interesting.
Yes.
Great. Okay. Yeah, that's very exciting. So what is your daily practice for enhancing your brain?
Thank you for asking me that question, because, you know, it's like I'm running the shop of the brain, right? What's the shopkeeper's brain like? Well, no, after that incident, I studied every single thing and I said, okay, my emotional limbic brain has to be now perform, you know, it has to be completely under my control and a lot of things. So I do very specific routines, and that is all around the movers, what we discussed. The first hour is extremely important. No waking up and going to the phone. That's my first thing. You don't go from the delta that you were in suddenly to beta fast. You give your brain time. So you do. I do 10 minutes of eyes closed. I go ahead and write and journal. I have a red journal and a green journal. So my red journal is writing out everything what was not serving end of the day. And then green journal is what comes in the morning. I spend a lot of time visualizing what I need in life, what will serve me, what will serve people. I have a goal to work where the work is creative, meaningful, and noble. So the combination of all the three. So visualization is sort of my power. I feel whatever is going on. And of course, exercise. I have some very special stretches and movements and all. We have redesigned it in such a way that, you know, cerebellum, right from cerebellum to pons to your thalamus to sensory stimulus. Thalamus is about sensations. Mm-hmm. And then to your motor cortex. Everything gets covered. We call it the special brainway, like it's a brainway exercise. So you're going and tackling each brain lobe. And then most important thing is social connection. So staying with a lot of people, you know, loving people. I strongly feel that every person should have sort of one quality which should overrun all of their qualities. So for example, you know, let's say there are problems in life and situations and difficult things which are coming in, but you operate from that one frequency or one thought, one continuous feeling, and you are able to pretty much change all of that. for me, that is just be happy and everything will get sorted. Mm-hmm. So I call it that happiness is in my DNA. And I keep on, you know, rewiring it. And I say gratitude is in my RNA. So happiness and gratitude. So yes, we are coming up with a book for gratitude. So gratitude ignites fulfillment and transformation. It's called Gift. It's mm-hmm. a gift mm-hmm. for shift.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do with people who are depressed? Because if you have like a depressed person, you can tell this person, yeah, you need to practice gratitude. Yeah, you need to be happy. Yeah, you need to be positive, but the person cannot do it.
Yes. So depression is often a range, right? So what you're saying, yes, with severe depression, when they are severely depressed, they just cannot do any of this. And that's where allopathy comes to rescue, right? So you do give them medications, you make a bridge, you pull them into the mild to moderate phase. And once they start getting the insight that this is what I need to change, then you start doing all these practices. And I'm also a huge fan of the family members, giving them the right stimulus, making understand what is going on in the brain. You know, now if I don't have a serotonin, and I don't have it, if my, let's say, serotonin is here, but I need it here, and obviously I need to resort to some form of molecule which gives me. So it's a method in which you understand what you're doing. And that's why I love the work of Dr. Daniel Amen also. He says, you know, you can change the brain provided you know what's going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to know what is going on.
Yeah. So you also have like then a special kind of treatment for people who are depressed.
Yes. So we do a lot of work with neuromodulation, neurofeedback. We do a lot of work with also certain frequencies. So depression is all about, you know, basically certain wiring or certain circuits are misfiring or certain chemicals are not working. So we do give them, again, a specific form of management. And of course, the good old therapy, psychotherapy, is not going anywhere. It's still, talking is a big way of change of perception, right? I mean, look at the number of the podcasts that people are listening. Why are they listening? Because when you listen, there's something which is changing in your brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for
mm-hmm.
cognitive framing, for reshifting, for the change that is happening, listening to the right thing is still important.
Yeah, right. So I have one last question for you. For example, if there's a person who has like experienced something, recently experienced something like a really bad situation or something really, for example, like a bad fight with a partner or whatever, and it's really hard to get out of this energy or to forget this incident, which really pulls you down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be your advice for a quick help?
I like the thing, you know, is there something quick in the brain? Well, yes. See, obviously what you're saying is rumination, and there'll be PTSD and trauma, which is stuck in the thing and all. So there's nothing quick really, but what my advice is 3M. Measure, monitor, and manage. I'm a huge fan of deep diagnostics. Go ahead and check what kind of circuit is going on and what is really happening. Possibly the reason is not going to be just this particular breakup or the thing that you just spoke, right? The reason could be something totally, entirely psycho-spiritual in nature, you know? So go ahead and find the root cause. Don't change the brand.
It could be that this incident is just reactivating an incident which happened before.
Yeah, who knows, you know? So you just don't stop there. So the 5-why practice is really good. Why would that happen? And then why would that happen? And then why would that happen? Somewhere down the line, once you get to the bottom of it, then there is a quick solution. Otherwise, you sort of would repair it with fixing the branches, right? That's a long solution. But the quick is go to the root as fast as you can, as best as you can.
Okay, and if you found the root, what do you do then?
You just solve it, you know. Once you get to the root, yes, everything gets sorted. Yes.
Yeah, so you're very pragmatic, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much for this really exciting conversation and for all the insights you shared with us. Is there something else which is important for you to share?
So I think life is very precious. We are living a human experience, but actually we are spiritual beings in the human experience. So we should be very open, very curious. Once you change the way you are even thinking, just one thought, as I said, you know, just be happy. Everything will get changed. So try to get to one thing which you can just you can rewire your DNA. Your generations will become that. You know, it's about you not impacting yourself, but also the generations. So I often say, I am limitless. You are limitless. Let's all be limitless, because that's our lab as well.
Oh, yeah, very, very nice. Very nice. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
I just switch shortly into German. Hey, ihr Lieben, ich hoffe, euch hat dieses Gespräch gefallen. Teilt es gerne auf allen Kanälen. Ich finde, es ist wirklich wert, geteilt zu werden und dass vielen Menschen einfach diese Informationen vermittelt werden, was eben das, welches Wunderwerk das Gehirn ist und was wir tun können, um unser Gehirn eben deutlich zu verbessern. Und wir packen natürlich auch die entsprechenden Links unter diesen Beitrag und danke für eure Unterstützung. Thank you so much.
Danke.
Thank you. And have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.